You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where 200 million people won't be dead by the end of this episode. I'm your host, Justin Emelzeski, and I want to thank you for joining us here again in the midside. It's been another crazy week. I know that I've been super busy in my life, got a lot going on, and then there's all the craziness on top of it of the culture. So why don't we just get into it by bringing in the co-hosts. Joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, it's been a crazy week here too. I don't want to be a one-upper, and certainly this isn't, but Justin, you'll get that joke. Colt had 61 teeth removed on Friday. If you hear him grunting and groaning in the background, he is high on drugs currently and recovering okay, but he's very, very needy. So you'll probably hear him flopping around and grunting. He's needing constant attention. But
what happened?
Well, his... Long story short, he was a rescue. I got him 8 years ago when he was two, and his teeth have already were pretty worn. He was chained in the backyard, chewed on the chain apparently a lot. So his teeth were pretty worn down. But I guess in the last probably 6 months, he sort of stopped chewing food, and so I've taken him to the vet. They said take him to this vet dentist. Of course, there's only two in LA, and so it just happened that there was, you know, in the middle of COVID, this was really hard to coordinate, but they finally had a slot for him. So they slipped him in on Friday. He was in surgery from 1 till about 6:30, removing all his teeth. And he's got a jaw infection that'll hopefully resolve after a nice long round of antibiotics. So he should be much, much happier after this. So
just don't set off any fireworks right now.
Yeah, there was fireworks last night and he was high. And so he kept looking at me and then kind of like... Okay, I'm supposed to panic, but I'm going to lay back down now. I was like, okay, good dog.
Also joining us from the fascist capital of America, comedian and commentator Kirk Wilcox.
What up, fellas? I'm actually recording this in a hotel outside of California because I had a party last week, so the mayor of Los Angeles shut off my electricity.
I shouldn't admit this on the podcast, but we had a surprise birthday partner birthday party for my business partner, and we definitely had people over. There were people here, and we played Virtue Signal the card game. Yeah. So
I have to ask both of you, and Kirk, first of all, it's great to have you back in the midside. But I have to ask both of you, what are you all going to do for the holidays? Like, can families not gather for Thanksgiving and Christmas?
Well, I can announce it now. Like usual, I will be setting up decorations and animations in the driveway/garage area of my house for trick-or-treaters for Halloween. And giving out candy like I always do. And then, of course, I will be deep-frying a turkey here like I do every year and inviting all the folks who can't travel or won't travel for various reasons from work and friends and neighbors to come enjoy some deep fried turkey throughout that weekend. So nothing really changing in my plans, but I'm sure hilarity will ensue because there'll be fireworks. And just this weekend, there was a bouncy castle put up in the yard, just like normal, and the mariachi band and the whole nine yards, right kitty corner from my house. So I think this neighborhood is either unusual or maybe places like Santa Monica are more in the deep end than here in Dale's Lawn. I don't know.
I trust that Governor Gavin Newsom and Mayor Garcetti will have saved California from coronavirus by Thanksgiving.
It's after the election, so maybe it'll be Joe Biden who saved us all.
Yeah. Even before he takes office, he'll save us from, without any power, he's going to save America from coronavirus.
Well, that's as good of a lead-in as any, so why don't we get into the rest of the absurdity of the weekend, the news without Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This
isn't just a fad.
As always, if you would like to support the show, you can do so on Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. We appreciate any and all support, even if it's as little as 1 cent. You can find those links at themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/Locals. The first story this week is one that really set me off, and the minute I saw it, I knew I had to talk about it on the podcast. It's our weekly coronavirus update, our weekly COVID update, because there's always something absurd happening with this virus. I've never seen something that's so pedestrian, which is this virus, have so much absurdity consistently. But this new consistency is brought to us by the CDC director, Redfield, and he spoke in front of the Senate, I believe, William. Was it the Senate he was speaking in front of?
Yeah, I just double-checked that it was the Senate.
Yeah, it was the Senate. So he was speaking in front of the Senate, and the news, I think it was New York Times, but William got this clip off Reuters. They pulled out a clip of him speaking. They condensed it down to a minute and 21 seconds, and, oh boy, this is a minute and 21 seconds. Let's just play it.
Today, and even after we have a vaccine, CDC encourages all Americans to embrace the powerful tools that we have right now. To wear a mask, particularly when they're in public. Maintain social distancing. Routine vigilant hand washing. Be smart about crowds. And stay home when you're sick. We're going to continue to give Congress and the nation the best public health advice. We're not going to political influence.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Try
okay,
to modulate
whatever.
That. Face masks. These face masks are the most important, powerful public health tool we have.
What?
And I will continue to appeal for all Americans, all individuals in our country, to embrace these face coverings. I've said it. If we did it for
embrace them,
six,
not wear
eight,
them.
10, 12 weeks, we'd bring this pandemic under control. These actually, we have clear scientific evidence they work, and they are our best defense. I might even go so far as to say that this face mask is more guaranteed to protect me against COVID than when I take a COVID vaccine, because the immunogenicity may be 70%. And if I don't get an immune response, the vaccine's not going to protect me. This face mask will.
I might even go as so far to say as this guy is evil.
Stop denying the science, you guys.
Yeah, tell me one thing that was scientific that he said, because he said the complex word immunogenicity, we're supposed to believe him. He just threw in some jargon there. I mean, there's so much wrong with what he said, and I'm just going to cut to the chase here. He said after the vaccine. After. They seriously want us to wear masks after the vaccine.
Did you watch Monday
Welcome
Night Football
Welcome to the
last
world of tomorrow.
Did you watch Monday Night Football last week when the Titans kicker missed 4 field goals? He probably thought to himself, man, if someone only shifted the goalposts further away... And you see, and the Democrats, or the our political leaders, I should say, they're like, okay, we'll shift some goalposts. Does everyone remember back in February and March when the CDC and I think the World Health Organization and I think Fauci even said that the masks won't really protect you, they don't really do anything? Even the FDA, there was a story, the FDA put a limit on how much a manufacturer in Ohio, how many N5-9 respirator masks they were allowed to make. They said, we can make 80,000. The FDA said, no, only 10,000. And then the FDA reversed their decision after they got pushback for it. And then Fauci started recommending the masks. And then he eventually admitted that he lied in the beginning because he didn't want people panicking and buying masks and creating a shortage for healthcare workers and whatnot. And even then, the mask, they say, it doesn't protect you. It just helps stop the spread. And it might slow down the spread along with social distancing. You guys remember that when it was all about flattening the curve and stopping the spread? And now they're saying, well, even if we get a vaccine, we're still going to have to wear the masks. And not only that, but they protect you. I thought that it was all about stopping the spread, not protecting you. I thought the science was pretty clear on that.
Thank you. Now I don't have to say anything. That
yeah,
was
now
good.
You stole Justin's rant.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's great. That was really good. You're absolutely right. Good. And we, you gotta, the cynic in me when it comes to government power has to wonder, like, this has got to be the golden days over in the CDC, right? Like, they've wielded more power in the, since February than they ever have since their founding, and they're not going to let this go, right? This the scariest part to me is not this nonsense about the mask. It's that part about how we will continue to ignore the political like process, right? Basically, right? What was the exact thing he said? We'll ignore the politics, right? Well, hey, wait a minute. You're a government entity. That this is why we have a, we should be, and we do advocate for the separation of science and government. You are a government entity. We have to look at everything you say through a political lens, because you are a government entity. We have to be skeptical of what you're saying. That's probably the opposite of what most people think, right? They think, oh, because it's the government, then we can trust it. And no, that's the opposite of what needs to happen. We should be extremely skeptical that we should be wearing masks for all time. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, some people love science and government because they conflate science with reason and being smart, and they think, oh, well, we should have science lead our politics. You hear that a lot. I was thinking about it yesterday, about how Medicare for All, a common argument I would, whenever I'd argue with people about Medicare for All, it's not really a big argument because Bernie Sanders got defeated in the Democratic primary, but I would always say that a problem is it's going to create, the government's going to have more regulations and taxes down the line, like taxes on soda and sugary foods and fatty foods and alcohol and tobacco and all the rest. They're going to regulate it and tax it even more, because eventually they're going to say, look, now because the taxpayers fund our hospitals and our doctors, this is creating a lot of health problems. So that cheeseburger that you like eating every week, that's going to give you chest pains 5 years down the road, and you're going to be a burden to taxpayers. So we're going to have to discourage you from eating that cheeseburger you love so much. And a lot of people would say stuff like, well, that's a slippery slope. Don't get carried away. And here we have, we've seen it all fucking year at this point, of politicians resorting to economic fascism through shutdowns, economic shutdowns, business closures, mask mandates, to what? To relieve the burden on hospitals. So yeah, you can already see the slope slipping.
Yeah, there was a great episode, maybe a couple episodes ago, on a podcast I was listening to, where they actually talked about how, you know, in the fog of war, some of these things might make sense, but when you're looking now, the goalposts have shifted so much. It is completely rational to just dismiss anything the CDC says now, right? It's almost absurd that we're still living, we talked about it a couple episodes ago on this very show, the fact that California doesn't even have an exit strategy, right? Like the green is still, we're wearing a mask and some businesses are closed in California.
Yeah.
You know, like that's just absurd.
Nobody has an exit strategy. I mean, here in Florida, we're just stuck in this perpetual state of waiting till they tell us we don't have to wear masks anymore. I mean, what's our exit strategy?
And isn't Florida, like, supposed to be the best or the freest at this point? Isn't Florida usually regarded as the freest state in this context?
Yeah, it's certainly the freest, but it's no fucking Garden of Eden here. I mean, we're still under the government's thumb, right? I mean, we still have to go, if we go anywhere we want to go, we still have to put on a mask because the social forces are so strong that DeSantis had to do something. You know, DeSantis had to have some regulations, because if DeSantis was just like, do whatever you want, everyone would have flipped him out and flipped out on him, and his political career would have been over. I mean, that's the thing. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, additionally, there was a study or a poll a few weeks ago to show that trust in government is down, and we keep seeing the rise. It's been this is a new phenomenon, but I would say since 2015, we've seen a rise in the embrace of conspiracy nonsense. And I think this is a reason why, is that our so-called institutions, our credible institutions and experts, keep giving American people reasons to not trust them.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because even from the beginning, you know, you guys are talking about shifting goalposts. The goalposts were never set up in the end zone to begin with. The goalposts were set up. They said 1 million to 3 million people were going to die. Have a million people even died worldwide yet? I looked recently, and it wasn't even at a million worldwide yet.
Man, I should backtrack to 200 million, buddy.
Yeah, that's what Biden told me. I think, Justin, we're going to have to go back into the show archives, deep into the archives, and look at our predictions and see how close they were to being real. I mean,
did I not say on this show they were going to make us wear masks forever? Did I not say that?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to look at our numbers predictions because I don't even remember. It's been so long. So much has happened. But
I can't believe you want to kill Grandma, Justin. Unbelievable.
I'm interested. I should have texted this to Daniel. But that judge in Pennsylvania ruled against the COVID-19 restrictions. Is this the only way out?
I talked to him and he mentioned some other case, which was a bigger deal. And I can't remember what it is right now because so much shit has happened. But there's another case that's a bigger deal than that.
I thought there was a case in Wisconsin, but I think that was months ago that overruled some lockdowns or something.
The conspiracy theorist in me, Kirk, is saying these are the places where the state, when they enacted these unconstitutional restrictions, didn't include the court in the arbitrary powers. Because some of the states, like the court, like somehow the state Supreme Court justice or some sort of court oversight was given. And in those states, none of these cases have had any chance of bubbling up. But and the ones where they don't, it seems like the court is actually stepping in and actually hearing these cases, even allowing them to be heard.
Well, be careful.
Oh, the Nashville, Tennessee thing. The Nashville, Tennessee thing. Not that it's a case, but just the idea that you saw what happened in Nashville, right? Did you see it, William?
No, what happened?
Oh, wow. Nashville's a big deal. It came out through the Freedom of Information Act. People got emails between government officials, and they intentionally covered up the fact that there were only like 25 cases that could be traced back to bars in Nashville, but they still shut down all the bars.
I like beer. Sorry, that was just a meme. I don't actually like beer.
Look, if you want to go to the bar, all you have to do is carry in a sign that says defund the police, and then it's a protest. So there you go.
Well, that's what Trump's been calling all of his rallies protests. So
right. But the point of the Pennsylvania story, the point of the mass story, the point of the Nashville story is the American people have to decide to be the American people again.
Yep.
And what I mean by that is the legal fodder is there. The avenues are there. This culture is not completely gone. This system is not completely gone. Sue Nashville. Go after Nashville. Do what the people in Pennsylvania did. Keep pushing back. Because if you don't push back, they're just going to keep pushing this stuff forward more.
Yep. And well, I'd encourage all our listeners, look up or join our Discord. You'll see it in a conversation we had, that Pennsylvania governor's ruling. Because it's actually quite reasoned, and it's going to be interesting as that case goes forward, how people interpret this going forward, right? Because that case is important for setting this precedent, because we've done something unprecedented. Not since World War II have we allowed this kind of control of the economy by the government. This is a good opportunity to set the stage correct in the courts. I'm sure I'll have more
now
to say about
Daniel
that court.
Sent
later.
Me an article showing that maybe that story's not true about the Nashville bars. So I don't know what the fuck's true anymore. I don't know. This is all insane. So maybe that story's not true. So if it is, I apologize for repeating a fake story. But Daniel told me it yesterday, and now he's immediately sending me a story. So blame Daniel.
Was it from hardtimes.net?
No, it wasn't. I wish it was. Let's move forward to other government department craziness and education, okay? So, Trump launches Patriotic Education Commission, calls 1619 Project ideological poison. So I'm going to read from this article. At the White House Conference on American History, Trump took aim at the 1619 Project, a series of essays in the New York Times re-examining America's legacy of slavery, which has become a common foil for right-wing politicians, calling it ideological poison that will dissolve the civic bonds of America. Trump instead proposed patriotic education, applauding a grant awarded by the National Endowment for the Humanities to develop, in his words, a pro-American curriculum that celebrates the truth about our nation's great history. Trump also announced that he will sign an executive order establishing a commission to promote patriotic education, which will be called the 1776 Commission, in contrast with the 1619 Project. Isn't this dichotomy that's being created an exact microcosm of what's wrong with our culture? Look, I'm not going to argue that there's problems with the way the current public education system is, but is the correct solution to double down on public education and just make a more nationalistic version of it? Isn't that just the same problem in the opposite direction?
I would say yes. I would actually say the bigger microcosm, which we're going to get to later, spoiler alert, is the Supreme Court vacancy. But I think this is more upstream from that, is the fact that this is what happens when you have a mixed economy. This is what happens when you bring politicians into the classroom and then have to make it an issue for voters. Now everyone has to vote on the curriculum. Now you've politicized the curriculum. You've politicized how much teachers are going to make. You've politicized what kids are going to eat at lunch, whether or not kids should get free lunches. You've politicized the issue of whether or not we should raise taxes to buy a new computer lab or buy new football jerseys or whatever the fuck they're spending money on these days. And yeah, and this is a symptom, is that when politicians are going to be deciding what kids are going to be taught in schools, this is what's going to happen. You're going to have a big pissing match between people who want a woke history lesson and people who want a nationalist history lesson. And yeah, the solution ultimately is to privatize the schools and get government out of the schools as much as possible. And you can decide what your kids are going to learn when you send them to school.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Here, the separation of education and state is definitely right up, you know, that's the solution here, getting this out of. But you've got all these institutions now that are taking money, and I think as long as they're taking the money, then banning this kind of thing, I think, is appropriate. Because if anything, it will force the schools to stop taking this money, right? If you put it as a hinge of saying, like, if you don't do it this way, then you don't get this money. You know, that's better. That's on the path of getting us to separating these things out. So I don't know. It's sort of like the shot's already been fired in my head. And maybe I'm completely wrong on this, but it's like, okay, well, if this is going to be this political at the federal level, I mean, it reminds me a lot about the sex ed debates. Remember those in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s?
Should we do sex ed or abstinence-only education?
Yeah.
Evolution. I mean, this isn't a new phenomenon. The issue of teaching evolution as settled science has also been controversial.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is all sort of like reminding me of that. I don't know. I think it dovetails with the other story we talked about on Discord about Princeton claiming that they were a racist institution, and then Trump deciding to launch an investigation because they're not allowed to be racist and accept federal money, which I thought was hilarious. I think that is a great trend. And I think even though it's, again, I am for the separation of education and state, but as long as these things are married, then yeah, this is exactly what you should be doing. If you're claiming to be racist and you're not allowed to be racist to take this money, then yeah, get investigated, revoke the money, take it away.
Yeah, that was one of my issues, where it's like, I wish Trump shouldn't be doing political stuff like that, using the power of government to get political. But at the same time, it's like, I can't think of anyone more deserving of getting the political slap on the wrist than places like Princeton University.
I agree. And I want to ask William, so what is it that Trump's doing here exactly that you're okay with? Because you talked about taking money away from, are you saying taking money away from the 1619 Project or something else?
No, I'm saying take, if you're going to say, if you're going to take federal money for in education, then I think it's okay for the government to say this criteria is attached to that money. I don't like it, right? But I can understand it. And if they're going to, teach things that are, completely arbitrarily false, then yeah, I think it's okay for them to take the money away. Now, the problem is that opens the door, right? Like, there's tons of problems with that too, because now you can say, well, we're required to, you know, you're required to teach Christianity, or you're, well, you probably couldn't do that because of the separation of church and state in the Constitution, but, or some other objectionable content, right? But I can at least wrap my brain around that, right? That makes sense. And I think it would lead to, or if people like us continually argue that this is why we need to get government out of it, this would naturally lead to more institutions that don't take the money so that they can get out of the strings, right? Now, the moment that we say you cannot educate people outside of the system, that's when you have a problem. And there's a lot of obstacles in a lot of states right now to being educated outside of the public system.
I find it humorous that people are saying that Trump's move, this is just like Nazi Germany. It was like Nazi Germany when he brought the government into the damn schools to begin with. And for all the concrete bound people who are about to say, but public education predates Nazi Germany. It's the same essential when you bring, because public education is ultimately a form of fascism.
Yeah.
And well, you know, ultimately what it is whoever, you know, has the gold makes the rules, right? And that's what William's saying, is whoever the money's coming from gets to make the rules. And if you put government in charge of something, they're going to make the rules. And I mean, we're seeing this throughout, you know, the entire country. We're seeing it with the Postal Service. And William, what you were saying really made me think of executive orders, right? You know, don't necessarily disagree with everything Trump does with an executive order. But every time he makes an executive order, he's growing the power of government.
Exactly.
Now, was he the first one to do that? No. All right, you want to move on to the next story?
Yeah.
Next story is, we're not talking as much about government this time, but we are talking about insanity. Warner Brothers reassures fans that J.K. Rowling isn't directly involved with new Harry Potter game.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
I mean, I guess that's a spoiler, but I mean, is it really a spoiler to say that WB fucked something up again? WB headline, WB disloyal to creator of property, right? Creative visionary is stabbed in the back by WB. Warner Brothers, the studio behind the latest Harry Potter video game titled Hogwarts Legacy, which we'll debate on next-gen consoles and PCs, has posted an FAQ that directly addresses J.K. Rowling's involvement with the title. It says, quote, J.K. Rowling is not directly involved in the creation of the game. However, her extraordinary body of writing is the foundation of all projects in the Wizarding World, the company writes. This is not a new story from J.K. Rowling. And the reason they're doing this is because of trolls on the internet. Her latest book, written under the pen name Robert Galbraith, which also happens to be the name of an American psychiatrist who is a proponent of gay conversion therapy, takes as its plot the cold case of a missing doctor who's believed to have been the victim of a murderous crossdresser, according to CNN. Rowling has continued to make transphobic comments on Twitter, which has prompted many fans to abandon the Wizarding World entirely. So, first of all, I think it's absurd that this story, right from The Verge, but of course it's The Verge, puts in little quips like transphobic comments and says, you know, happens to be the name of an American psychiatrist who's a proponent of gay conversion therapy.
Because I bet it's also like a meat packer in Ohio too.
that guy, he's a meat packer, really?
Wait, Justin, I have to comment on the story for a second, just so people understand how this smear got started. I'm basing this completely off of Blair White, who's a Republican trans YouTuber, her review of the book. She said the book was okay, but not very good. And there's literally two sentences or maybe a paragraph about this so-called trans person that committed a murder. It was literally just someone. It was a murderer who took a disguise, who put a wig and a trench coat or something as a disguise to get one of their victims. That's it. It's not a trans person. It's just a murderer who's using a disguise. So I look forward to us reanalyzing Sherlock Holmes and calling Sherlock either trans or something, because he definitely did wear different disguises of different sexes. So,
well, what about the episode Sean Hunter dresses up as a girl on Boy Meets World? Is he trans?
We're all trans now.
Well, that's what they want us to be, right? And I mean, that's the insane thing about all of this. Like, your point's extremely well taken, William, where they're intentionally misportraying things, but they're intentionally misportraying J.K. Rowling to begin with by calling her transphobic, right? This is the same thing with when they started calling people homophobic. And they just decide if you say something they don't like about gay people, you're homophobic. If you say something they don't like about Islamic people, you're Islamophobic. If you say something they don't like about trans people, you're transphobic. And they
but only certain kind of trans, gay, or Islamic people, right?
Right. I mean, that's why I said they don't like.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And here's the crazy thing about it, right? Here's the crazy thing about it. This is what's the extra insanity to me about it. Find one artist that you agree with 100% of the time. It's impossible. There is no other human being on the earth you agree with 100% of the time because you probably don't even agree with yourself 100% of the time because you're trying to figure stuff out and you believe in stuff now that you didn't believe in yesterday. And 5 minutes from now, after you're enlightened by this show, you're going to believe in stuff you didn't believe in 5 minutes ago. That's the way the world works. And you're going to throw out this entire thing. You're going to burn books and put it on Twitter because this person holds a view you don't like. Well, now you're going to come back at me and you're going to say, well, her view is so abhorrent that I have to throw it all out. Okay.
I heard her ancestors once
owned slaves. That's where you want to draw the line.
I heard her ancestors once owned slaves.
Right, exactly. That's where you're going to draw the line. Her ancestors owned slaves. That's where you're going to draw the line. She said something about trans people you don't like. You know, there are so many evils that exist in the world. That's where you want to draw the line. You want to draw the line in a way that makes it almost impossible for you to live. This is absolutely insane. And Warner Brothers caving to this shows that Warner Brothers learned nothing from the Snyder Cut. And it was only Warner Media and HBO Max and AT&T who learned anything. Warner Brothers is still an incompetent company.
Can't wait for Space Jam 2.
Is that a Warner Brothers movie?
Oh, yeah, of course. Looney Tunes.
Crazy. This is what we need is LeBron James in a movie. All right, does anybody have anything else to say about this story?
I predict the game won't do well, but not because it's of this controversy, but usually games based on movies just don't do well.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the game even? What do you do in the game? Hogwarts Legacy. Like, is it like Grand Theft Auto, except, or The Sims?
I heard it's set like before the books, well before the books. And, you're just going around doing wizardy things, doing quests and stuff. Looks like a sort of a loot RPG, light RPG. Lots of microtransactions,
why wouldn't you
I'm
just
sure.
save your money and go to Universal in Florida? Where you
because
can actually
closed.
Walk around. Well,
oh, I
it's
meant
not
the one
closed.
Here
you
in
just
California.
Have to wear a mask.
Yeah.
Get that butter beer!
See, he knows. The butter beer is good.
Hell yeah. We got it at Universal Studios Hollywood, too.
Yeah. Hollywood, we actually did that for Christmas one year as our company party for the company I work at. We actually had Universal. That was our Universal night. And I did drink a lot of butter beer.
It's good stuff. Not a fan of the roller coaster, though. Gives me a headache.
I don't think there's this controversial opinion. Neither Disney nor Universal have any good rides here in California.
I like the California Screamin' roller coaster.
Yeah,
but
it's
you're
now
right.
the Incredicoaster, by the
yeah.
way.
Take me to Cedar Point.
Oh yeah.
Day.
Also, dude, the Tower of Terror, which in California is now Guardians Escape.
Yeah,
that's a good ride. The Cars ride is a good ride.
Yeah, we usually hit those rides when we go.
Yeah, you're wrong on that one, William.
I told you it's a controversial opinion.
It's a wrong opinion.
I got
Speaking
a season pass
opinion.
At Disneyland in February!
Dang.
Yeah. Oh, man. I feel bad for you Californians with Disney still closed. I could go to Disney. I'm waiting, but I could go. All right, but speaking of wrong opinions, you want to talk about, like, judges and stuff? Because they make a lot of opinions. Yeah, let's do that. As you all know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg died over the weekend. And our country is now on fire. Wait, it was already on fire. What's worse than being on fire, guys?
Yeah, I see a lot of people saying, we're going to riot, we're going to burn the system down and whatnot. If Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, if they try to fill her seat, it's like, or we're going to lock the country down. I saw another tweet. It's like, there are already riots and lockdowns. Like, who do you think you're scaring?
Exactly. Exactly. I don't know what's worse, but it's going to happen. They'll find some way to make this worse. And here's a perfect example. This is a story from Vox. The headline is, "This is an opportunity," Fox News reacts to Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death. And I'm going to read from it. "Less than 1 hour after the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was announced, speculation began on Fox News about her replacement. On Tucker Carlson Tonight, Friday, Ned Ryan, the CEO of American Majority, an advocacy group that trains conservatives who aspire to political office, said he would advise Donald Trump to nominate Amy Coney Barrett, who he said, I'm a big fan of. In fact, I prefer her over Kavanaugh. I think she'd be a solid choice. She's still in her 40s. She's on the Seventh Circuit right now, has proven conservative credentials. The comments, while arguably answering a question looming large for many Fox viewers in the wake of Ginsburg's death, serve as a reminder of all that has at stake in nominating a new justice. And they are also a reminder of the hypocrisy of Republicans, like Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who infamously held the late Justice Anton Scalia's seat open in an election year. At the time, he argued, doing so would allow voters a chance to influence who was chosen. Following Ginsburg's death, McConnell said, this time around, President Trump's nominee will receive a vote on the floor of the United States Senate. He declined to disclose the timing of the vote. So there's a couple things here. First of all, I'm not really interested in this political, like, back and forth sniping, because now the right and left have switched positions and nobody seems to be pointing that out to both sides. It's all like, oh, the right are hypocrites. No, the left are just as bad as hypocrites, right? Last time the left was like, no, we need to fill the seat. We need to fill Scalia's seat before the election. But now they're like, no, we don't have to fill the seat. We have to wait. And they're just saying the right's the hypocrites for saying we have to fill the seat when they've literally switched positions. There are no principles here, people. They've switched positions. What's interesting to me, though, is I'm seeing a broader cultural sort of trend here that's really annoying the crap out of me. And we saw it after Black Panther. I say Black Panther. What's the name of the Black Panther actor? My mind's blanking.
Chadwick Boseman.
After Chadwick Boseman died, and people started saying, well, who's going to replace Chadwick Boseman? And people were going, how dare you? That is rude. You need to respect his legacy, and you need to respect his life by not talking about it. And it's the same thing here. People are like, oh my God, within an hour, they were talking about who's going to replace RBG. This is what these people are known for. This
By the way,
is the
don't...
effect they have on these people's lives. Most people did not know Ginsburg in person. Most people did not know Boseman in person. The way they touched people's lives is the roles they had. So it's normal to think about who will replace them and how that will work. The stifling of conversation is crazy to me. It's absolutely crazy.
I was going to say, don't we have the deep fake technology at this point to keep Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther for future movies?
Huh. You would think so.
Just keep him in. Let's really go all in on this deep fake stuff and keep Chadwick Boseman in. Don't replace him. I actually wanted to take it a step back because I remember hearing this at the time when Kavanaugh was being appointed, that Amy Coney Barrett was the preferred one, but Trump was saving her in case he ever had to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Doesn't that say a lot about how we think about these things? Like, shouldn't gender not matter? If Amy Coney Barrett was really the most qualified judge and the preferred pick, shouldn't she have been appointed when Kennedy retired? Why are we so upset? It says a lot because conservatives and the right, they claim to be against identity politics and we shouldn't be doing that. Yet they seem to be okay with it when their Lord and Savior, Donald Trump, seems to be doing it with Supreme Court vacancies. Like, oh, I got to save a woman in case I got to replace a woman. Isn't he supposed to be standing against this nonsense?
I think that's a great point. I think the other way to look at it, though, is that is a different cynical way to look at it, in that if you think you may have two and possibly three judges to place on the Supreme Court during your two terms, then certainly this would be the order that you would do it in, because the fact that he would nominate a woman to replace a woman inoculates from the attack that we saw with Kavanaugh.
Yes.
Right? So, and that may sound cynical, but it is, you know, that is politics, right? So
yeah.
He could still say, I mean, he's not going to say this because, again, he's playing politics with this with pick. But if the Democrats are going to use Kavanaugh being a male and being toxically male and having a penis against him, then certainly that would have, I mean, it was already at 11, right, with Kavanaugh, right? Imagine yeah. if that replacement was for the person who helped with Roe v. Wade, right, and all these other things, right? Like, it would be devastating, right?
Yeah, I would say it's pussy politics, because if you're playing by the left's rules, your goal should be to obliterate the rules. And then if it comes up, you have to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg and you choose a man, and then you have to deal with that. Well, then stand on principle. Say, look, gender shouldn't matter. I'm replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg with someone who I think is the most qualified. Sorry, it's not the gender you want it, but gender should not be matter. Shouldn't matter when picking someone to interpret the Constitution.
Yep.
But I was going to say, you know, talking about microcosms of our culture earlier, this is the third time since February 2016, the third time where the president has to fill, and this is a different president because it was Obama trying to fill it back in February of 2016, where the president has to fill a Supreme Court vacancy. And no matter the political spectrum, both left and right, the country seems to lose its freaking mind, and I think that's a bad sign. What that the country cannot even handle something as simple as filling a Supreme Court vacancy.
I think it's such a small minority that even give a shit. That is the Twitter echo chamber. It's no one cares. No one cares, right? There's a part of Trump's base that cares, right? There certainly has a mandate. I think I have the Mitch McConnell rationalizes his hypocrisy by saying, like, hey, in 2016, we were elected to keep a promise of checking the last days of a lame duck president. And then they were reelected in 2016 and expanded in 2018, promising to fill federal judge vacancies. So that's how they rationalize it. But you know, I don't think anyone cares outside of that sort of core political base and the Twitterati. Now, there's... The problem is, though, that group is so loud and so violent right now that it is starting, like, people are starting to pay attention. I don't think no one could tell you who Ruth Bader Ginsburg was. There was a movie, it got lots of reviews, but nobody watched it.
I mean, I don't know what's the scarier thing, that nobody knows who she was, or that there's a small group of people who care about this hateful stuff that's leading the country. I mean, aren't both things fucking terrible signs of the destruction of this country?
Yeah, they are. Oh, well, I've got one funny thing, and then I want to have a serious thing. So the funny thing is, and I tweeted it this morning, they were singing to a Jewish atheist, Amazing Grace, as in honor of her passing in front of the Supreme Court building. You know, Amazing Grace, of course, being written by a captain of a slave ship. And I just found that deeply, deeply ironic. Is ironic the right term there? I could not look at that and not say that is farce. All these social justice warriors, they should be canceling Amazing Grace, not singing it to a Jewish atheist.
And she also apparently criticized Colin Kaepernick for kneeling during the national anthem. Time to cancel RBG, folks.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We have to cancel it from
May
the grave.
Rest in peace.
So what you're saying is this was an assassination, is what you're saying.
Oh, no. No.
Hey, I mean, if Trump can get rice in this week, then maybe we can start a conspiracy about RBG. But
I'm just surprised they didn't call it a COVID death.
Well, we haven't seen the stats yet. Did you check the COVID website?
What is it going to say? 200,000 deaths in the United States
plus RBG.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah. I keep saying RGB by accident, by the way, because I do too much computer stuff. But so if I said that already, I apologize. So the other
She'd still be alive if you wore a mask.
Oh no! If I'd only wore a mask.
Did they wear masks in the Supreme Court case they finished recently?
I think, did they do it over Zoom? I know a lot of state courts have been, and federal courts have been doing it over Zoom, doing court cases over Zoom.
Oh my God, I'd love to see RGB do Zoom.
Did you say RGB?
Yeah, on purpose.
All right. So Chuck Schumer said that nothing is off the table.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but we know nothing is off the table. I mean, look at how they lied and smeared Kavanaugh. Like, I am going to put this out right now, and I'm sure someone else has already done this, but whoever Trump nominates, I claim that they raped me. I'm just putting it out there now, just so that I can be the I can benefit with the book deals, the upcoming book deal. So I'm available. So all you Democrat operatives that need someone to claim rape, I will claim it so that we can get the book deal started.
So now we can have a national debate of can men be raped?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I identify as a woman for the podcast. So maybe, I don't know. We'll have to work this out.
Is it bad? I'm kind of looking forward to this because I want to see what the shit show is going to be. Like, to me, I'm now literally to the point of anticipating witnessing the farce. And what I mean by that is, what can they possibly do this time? What can they possibly do? You know there's going to be something that's going to happen to make this absurd and into a shit show. What is it going to be?
I don't know. I mean, they're going to throw everything but the kitchen sink at whoever they nominate, so I don't know. I mean, wasn't it just 2 weeks ago there was wasn't The Onion, I think it was a Babylon Bee story, that they wrote a mock story, and then within like 2 days, the actual headlines were matching the Babylon Bee story.
I know what you're talking about. I can't remember what the story.
Yeah, I can't remember either. But I was like, man, the window is getting smaller, right? Like between something being a joke and becoming woke, the window is getting smaller and smaller. So I think maybe Hard Times or Babylon Bee or The Onion, they should pre-write a bunch of accusation stories and see which one, and put them all out there and see which ones stick.
We're definitely living in a simulation. No, I have no doubt. We are not the prime universe.
I guess Trump did. I saw on Twitter, I guess he said that he's going to make an appointment next week. I was thinking he was going to kick this can down the road past the election and try to get it through during his lame duck, or just after, even if he wins, he would just do it after the election and make an election issue. And I thought he had a good excuse to do so, because he could say, look, when I picked Kavanaugh, you guys raked him over the coals. It was, we had to bring him in front of the Senate and have him testify and all this. Maybe I should take some time to really think about who the next person should be and just not make a decision until after the election. But I guess I guess that's not happening.
No, I think in his political calculus, he sees this as a campaign promise, another campaign promise he can tout, right? Yeah. Because he's certainly been touting for weeks now, which indicates to me that they kind of knew this was going to happen soon, about how effective he's been at filling the vacancies in the federal court, obviously outside the Supreme Court, but all the other federal court vacancies.
And I guess Biden also said today that he would not look to pack the Supreme Court. So that was a relief. Hopefully he doesn't flip on that.
Well, it's not up to him. That's a law. That's not a sorry. Yeah, it's not up to him. It's definitely the Congress that set that rule, which is confusing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I was actually talking to Ari Armstrong on Twitter, and and we were going back and forth on that, trying to figure it out, because it's apparently a federal statute. That's all that it is, that sets the number of court justices. So you would need.
So even if you wanted to, even if you said, "Hey, I'm gonna appoint three new justices," he wouldn't be able to.
No, the Congress would have to pass a law changing the number of justices, and then you would have to have the president sign it and or veto it or get overridden, and then those vacancies would be available, and then the president would have to appoint them.
Congress, it probably wouldn't be hard for them to do, though.
If they control both houses in the presidency, they might be able to pull it off. But then you get it gets complicated fast because of the whole nuclear option thing, and then filibustering and. You know, there's reasons why these things are that way.
Right, they'd have to get rid of the filibuster, too.
Yeah, yeah. So the original check on this was the fact that the Senate, and this is something I discussed on Twitter, was that the Senate was appointed by the states before, right? So there was sort of this understanding that the court wouldn't change size arbitrarily because the states would just be like, no,
like, fuck no, right? Like, they would see through it, right? And see it as a check on the executive, right? But now that's not there anymore, right? The Senate is more beholden to their party than their state.
Yes. Hashtag repeal the 17th Amendment.
Absolutely. I'm always up for those kinds of discussions. It's super nerdy government check and balance talk, but there's a lot of problems we have because of the direct election of the Senate.
Yes. Because I was actually getting more pessimistic because I was thinking if Biden wins and then manages to flip the Senate, then he could conceivably start packing the court if he wanted to.
Yeah, packing the court is always a danger. I don't know what the right solution is other than repealing the 17th, of course. But it's always something that is going to be on the table. I think it's just there's political will for it. I don't see it, but you certainly could see the Democrats are so desperate right now for power. I mean, they're literally screaming in desperation, right, for power, and I wouldn't take it out of the realm of possibility.
I do think that this favors Trump, though, and I do think that nominating someone now favors Trump because if there's not going to be any debates, this will basically be shorthand for the debate, and he can use whatever the controversy is against his nominee to say, see, this is why you need to vote for me. And I guess polls have already said that like 54% of Americans want him to fill the seat before the election, which I would take as, you know, he has support of 54% of the Americans. Now we know how flawed polls are, but I just think overall this favors Trump if he goes forward with it ahead of time.
Absolutely.
Just because there's only
one person this hurts, and I know none of the folks who support Biden want to hear this. Whatever, what little air there is in the empty, dementia-riddled head of Joe Biden and his campaign is now gone. All coverage will be about this until the seat is resolved. And this is the end of the Biden campaign right here.
Right. So the only way he can get anything back is if he tries to debate, which favors Trump as well.
Right.
So I mean, the second RBG died, I was pretty much like, well, I guess Trump's going to be reelected now. Because even if he doesn't put forward a nominee, I think that favors him as well. Because then he can just say, well, you don't want to vote for Biden and have them pick who is going to be the nominee.
See, so. I thought that if it's not filled by the election, that might energize the kind of on the fence or uninterested Democrats who are not excited about Biden, but excited about stopping another Trump Supreme Court. That might get people to the polls.
And that's probably the calculation they did and why they ultimately decided to nominate someone ahead of time, because they did a long-term, short-term calculation. And I'm sure people within influence Trump, right? Because people within who are on the side of the right are going to want to make sure that they have that judge in there, even if their person doesn't get reelected. So it's the safer thing for them. So I'm sure what you said was the calculation.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens.
It's going to be fun. That's what I'm going to say about that. It's going to be fun.
I predict,
and I'm looking forward to it.
Unfortunately, and I don't mean this as a joke, I predict fire and blood.
I don't know if you know this, but we live in Los Angeles, or I live in Los Angeles, and so I'm not looking forward to the day after Trump gets reelected.
Well, you guys can always move like I did, so.
It's really hard to move the store. It took me 2 years the first time. I don't want to do it again.
We'll just leave Matt and Lily in charge of it.
Good luck, everybody else. I'm going to Texas.
Hey, man, I walked out of Walmart and there was a lady in a Trump hat walking out, and I was like, you know, I may not agree with you, but at least you can wear that hat around here.
I don't know. I still see those two signs when I walk the dog, my drug-addled dog. I still see those two Trump signs here in Dale's lawn, so.
All right, let's head on to some other topics. We're going to actually do a different type of segment this week in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and sing. you'd like to continue to talk to us during the week, you can do so on our Discord channel. There's a bunch of news stories in here that weren't talked about. That weren't talked about during the week, or weren't talked about during this episode, that were talked about during the week. There's even some stuff that came out just before. Stuff about Antifa showing up for a non-existent Proud Boys rally in Philadelphia that I haven't even looked at yet. That's going on. The 200 million joke I made at the top is in there. So there's a lot of good content in there. You can join it by going to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast, clicking on any episode, and inside the episode post, there is a link to join our Discord. We'd love to talk to you. So if you follow me on Twitter, you know I usually just talk about the intersection between Ayn Rand's work and Zack Snyder's work. And because of that, I piss off a lot of people. But I do also get a lot of people who are curious about either of the two. And recently, I found someone who is curious about Ayn Rand. And he sent a really good question. You know, usually I can reply to people in a couple tweets or a couple lines. But this one I couldn't. So I wanted to bring it on the show, and I wanted to talk about it on the show. I'm not going to try and say his name. He said, I do have to ask you, why do people keep Ayn Rand's political views in lines of Hitler? Why is she treated as such a despicable figurehead? I never got that. And I think this is a great question, and I think it's an intellectually honest question. Because a lot of people just see people who are demonized, and they go, oh, well, that person must be evil because that person is demonized. And that actually happens within the Zack Snyder fandom, right? They saw the way he was demonized by the media for Batman versus Superman, for Man of Steel, I mean, retroactively to Sucker Punch and 300. They see that, and yet they still don't question the way Ayn Rand is treated. Now, here's someone in the Zack Snyder movement, in the Zack Snyder fandom, that does question it. And I think it's a really good question because I think it has a really, really complex answer. I mean, I think the first answer is, well, let me backtrack a little bit. I mean, I think it has a complex answer because, first of all, the fact that they compare her to Hitler is beyond laughable, is it not, William?
Well, hey, if we can call Ben Shapiro Hitler, then I guess we can call, you know, someone with Jewish heritage Hitler, right? I mean,
right. I mean, that's
Hitler,
part of why it's absurd.
I think also it's her view on collectivism versus individualism that puts it, you know, in such contrast to folks who are familiar with Rand's ideas, right? Because you think what,
right.
That's just like forget, like that's just like the surface level sort of like jarring thing. But then even getting into like the metaphysics, right? Like, you know, Rand rejects mysticism like, you know, like at its core. And then you see all the sort of, you know, Marxist Hegelianism and all this like crazy Kant shit that Hitler advocated about, you know, blood and soil and, you know, the spiritual, you know, underpinning of the Reich and all these other things. And you're just like, that's the contrast. It seems for someone who is familiar with Rand's idea to be absurd. And I can see how this person who is curious about the ideas and starts looking at them at the surface level and thinking, well, wait, where do we get to the part where we, you know, throw the Jews in the oven? Right. Like where do we get to the part where we, you know, kill the gypsies and kill the gays and invade Poland? Like, where do we get to this part? Right.
Right. And where do we get to the part of big government? Right. Because that's the thing they say, right. They'll say, oh, she's a fascist, right. She's a fascist, big government. That's what she's all about. Right. It's fascism. But the reason this is complex is I think there are two reasons this happens. One is just the simple reason of they're just the people who have heard she's that way, so they're just repeating it. And that's not as interesting to me. But the second is this idea of we're living in a society now where we live in a society. But no, we are, where people are just completely anti-truth. They're anti-truth.
Yep.
And it's the idea of, Kirk, it's the idea of Marxism, where there can be no power structure. So if there ever is a power structure, it must be destroyed. So we have to be in this constant cycle of destruction. And they see someone like Rand, who's saying freedom, because power needs to be in the individual, Well, they see, well, that necessarily will give certain people more power than others, so therefore that system is bad. But ultimately, they're just going to say any system is bad and any system is Hitler, because that's their the basis of their worldview.
You know, a lot of people say, you said it's Marxism, and I'm sure Marxism has a lot to do with it, but I think it's a lot more than that. If you really pay attention to a lot of the up-and-coming hip conservative political pundits, namely the guys at Daily Wire and PragerU, they're very hostile toward Ayn Rand. Andrew Klavan did a whole segment about how she sucks. Michael Knowles did a whole segment about how he doesn't like Rand, and he did another interview with Dave Rubin about how he doesn't really like individualism that much. Ben Shapiro referred to her philosophy as pretty garbage. They'll throw some bones at her and say, oh, well, she was right about money. She had some good arguments for capitalism. But overall, they're very hostile toward her. And I think ultimately it comes from the fact that her ideas are so revolutionary and so against the grain. And I think for a lot of people, it's really hard to just maybe admit that you're wrong or the ideas that you've believed in are wrong. And Rand really challenges it, not so much on the individualism, collectivism part, but just everything. And when you grow up in a culture that tells you that that the standard for good is dying on a cross for the sake of others, and then you have this other person that says, no, what are you talking about? In fact, last week I had an air conditioning salesman at my house inspecting my system to see if I need an upgrade. And he was going on, and then he mentioned, he's like, you know, I'm just a selfless guy. You know, I just pride myself on being selfless. I don't want to leave someone knowing that I did a bad job. I said, well, I see it the other way. I think selfishness is good. And he was surprised, like, really? What makes you say that? It's like, well, think about it. Would you feel good about yourself if you went home and knowing that you shortchanged a customer and that their AC is going to break down in 2 months and that you schemed them out of 12 grand, 15 grand or whatever? Would you feel good about yourself? And he's like, no, it's a good way of putting it. And it's just people just don't really think about it. And I think it just challenges a lot of views that people have, including with truth. As you mentioned, we just have a society that just rejects truth. And I think at the end of the day, what Rand offers is the fact that reality is what it is. And it's really up to you to use your mind to figure out what you want to do with your life. And I think to a lot of people, that's uncomfortable, that you have to think that it's hard work. And that if your life isn't good, the chances are it's probably because of your own lack of thinking and ambition.
Yeah, Kirk, I think that's a great point. If you look at someone
Which
like
one?
Andrew,
you made like 8 points.
Well, I'm going to integrate them. Watch me as I integrate them. So when you think about someone like, you know, Andrew Klavan or the, you know, those Daily Wire folks, they are altruists, religious, right? They believe in mysticism, right? And Rand confronts them all the way up and down their philosophical hierarchy. So I would expect them to have rationalization barriers for Rand, right? Like she comes out and says selfish, right? And then when you think about folks who call her fascist, they also see the same thing, because when they see selfish, they see the wolf, right? They see humanity as people who are holding power or people who are being oppressed. That's it. You're one or the other, right? Yes. And so when you say I advocate for selfishness, they immediately go to Nietzsche and then Kant, right? And they say, well, clearly this is evil, right? And so that's why they call it fascism. They're like, well, clearly, you know, you'll hear it, right? Clearly, Adolf Hitler was selfish. So therefore, if Rand advocates selfishness, then she must be a Hitler, right?
I think Stefan Molyneux even made that point about Hitler. Like, oh, you could say Hitler was selfish because he just wanted power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he claims to be like a. He also claims to be like a someone that's advancing or building on the foundations of Aristotle and Ayn Rand. He said that once.
Well, and that's why, William, what you said is why I said it was Marxist. Because I was relying on the Marxist premise of there's always an oppressor and there's always an oppressed. That's why I was saying that. But then, you know, Kirk touched on the other thing that I think is the major principle here. And is they see her as evil because she's asking them to take responsibility for their own lives. And psychologically, that strikes terror in them. So they see that as threatening. They see that as someone, you know, looking to work against them rather than, you know, the state who's going to be on their side, because they've been raised on the idea of like other people will take care of you.
Yeah, and you can even take it a step further. I think with a lot of religious people, a reason why they don't want to give up religion is because the idea that there's not an intelligent creator who's looking after them, and that there's not like some afterlife that they get to go to as long as they're a good little boy here on Earth in this life, and that everything's random, and that, hey, maybe a meteor will strike the Earth tomorrow. I think that can be terrifying for a lot of people, for people to come to that grip and...
Yeah, to really own your own happiness is terrifying for someone who is religious, right? To know that you own your own happiness.
Kirk's point's really well taken because, I mean, even in this COVID thing, I know people who are, like, super stressed out because they might get it. And if they get it, like, then they're going to have to stay home from work and quarantine and things like that. And I'm just like, why are you worrying about it? And they ask me, what do I mean? And I say... Look, I can only control what I can control, and I can't control what I can't control, so I'm only going to worry about and put energy into what I can control.
I lick every doorknob I pass.
And I think people, you know, who have the fear in this way, it's the randomness that Kirk was talking about, and it's what, I think it was you, William, was it you, Kirk, who said the meteor, or William said the meteor?
I did. Yeah.
You said, yeah, I think that's exactly what they're afraid of. It's the idea of, well, what does my effort mean if a meteor can just come and take it away? What do all the decisions I made mean if I can just get COVID? Do you see what I'm saying? So yeah. I think that the point's really well taken. It's not just religious people.
Yeah, it's just, you know, for a lot of people, it's just when you deal with ideas like this, it's just like, whoa, this is a lot. And I think the best way to get introduced to someone like Rand is just to kind of take it slowly and take it step by step.
I think the best way to get introduced to someone like Rand is to do it independently and come to it on your own. Yes. But unfortunately, that's difficult in today's society with the way, you know, Twitter is and everything, and you get biased by it immediately.
Yeah, because, you know, they hear selfishness and then their mind goes, boop, Mr. Burns, Mr. Potter, the bad guys from Captain Planet.
Yeah.
But there are people who get it. There are people who get it. I will tell you, I've brought it up at school and there are students who've expressed saying, well, I heard about selfishness, but then I learned I had to take care of myself first and it made me think differently about it. And that's unprompted. That's just the term coming up in class. So there are people who get it, but there's such social pressure. And I think that's the irony that people are seeing, that it's the people with the greatest social pressure are comparing her to somebody who relied upon social pressure to annihilate a group of people. And it's so ironic.
This just in, Justin, your funding at your school has been canceled by the social justice warriors for teaching about selfishness.
I didn't even teach it. I just brought up the idea. I was teaching logical fallacies, and I brought up the idea of a package deal, and that was my example.
Yep. As Milkbagger, who's an objectivist, said on Twitter the other day, not a single atrocity has ever been launched by the words, think for yourself. It's the selfless that are willing to be a cog in a death machine.
I think it's a great place to end. I don't think we're going to top that. So let's draw a close to this episode. What did we learn this trip? Kirk?
I learned that from our good friend William over here that the president can't just pack the Supreme Court like I thought they could. That Congress first needs to pass a law extending the amount or adding to the amount of justices that are permissible on the Supreme Court.
William,
I learned that there's going to be fire and blood this fall. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that if I ever want to just, like, take an episode easy and have someone rant for me, I can just have Kirk on. Because his rants this episode were excellent, and I was literally just listening.
Us, like, Californians, yeah, doing the jobs you Floridians won't do.
Yeah, what a leech.
Well, maybe it's just you have all the anger of still being in California, and I'm chill now.
We have so many deep veins of untapped anger here in California.
Oh, well, of course, I want to thank Kirk for coming on the episode. Kirk, it's always a pleasure to have you. Where can people find you? Again.
Oh, yeah, find me at Kirk Wilcox on Twitter, at Kirkomania on Twitch, and Kirk Wilcox on YouTube. I try to update at least once a week on YouTube. I've had some, I would say some really good content. I've been really proud of the stuff I've been putting up the last few months.
What do you do on Twitch?
I do live streaming. Sometimes I'll stream like video rebuttals, or sometimes if I have really nothing I really want to talk about, or if I have something that I want to talk about but don't have visual aids, I'll just play a game. Like I played Sonic the Hedgehog the other day so I could rant about Social Dilemma, that new Netflix movie everyone's raving about. But like I can't play a Netflix movie and respond to it because that's a copyright. So I'm like, all right, I'll just play Sonic and then I'll just talk about it while I play Sonic. So then there's something, so it's not just me just, you know, being a bore or whatever, just talking to a microphone.
Interesting. I may start using that strategy. I like it. As always, thanks to the listeners for listening. Without you, we wouldn't have a show. It would just be me ranting into a microphone. You know, I've done that before, and I do episodes without visual aids, but maybe I can.
Sometimes the microphone's not even plugged in.
That's true.
Well, sometimes, yeah, it's also good, like, sometimes I'll be in the middle of a thought and I have to gather my thoughts, and, like, if I'm just, you know, I'm Dr. Robotnik, that'll give me a chance to really think things through and there's not, like, a lot of dead time. I shouldn't have used the word bore, but, like, it really helps fill in the gaps when there's, like, dead time or you're trying to gather your thoughts.
Oh, I just go and I spew crap rather than pause. I'll pause for 2 seconds and then keep spewing crap. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. We love you, libertarians. I think you see why, especially after an episode like this. If you want any type of t-shirts, you can go to themidside.com/store. I'm going to have some t-shirts with the cut cover on there soon, my novel, so you can pick up one of those. As always, you can support us on Patreon or Locals. Like I said, Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. themidside.com/Patreon. themidside.com/Locals. That's how we keep the lights on. I mean, I'm in a closet right now. That's how you keep the lights on in this closet so I can actually have light while recording. And as always, the number one thing you can do for this show is tell a friend. Tell a friend who's sick of the farce and wants to witness it with us. We all love to witness the farce together. It's more enjoyable when there are more people you're witnessing the farce with.
Do you like Locals?
I haven't had a problem with it so far.
Yeah, so far so good.
I've thought about creating a Locals account just to make anti-Dave Rubin content to see if he would kick me off. So, and then I can be like, what about free speech in the marketplace of ideas?
So far, so good. It's got, I think as soon as they offer the Discord integration, that we would be able to move fully off of Patreon, which would be pretty good.
I think it's good to have it. I don't ever want to fully move off Patreon because I want to give people the opportunity
to donate. The ability to move fully off. Qualify that. The ability to move fully off Patreon.
Right. Because I think there are some people who like Patreon better than Locals, so we have options for both. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a magical anti-transphobic day. Wasn't Hermione the first trans witch in the Harry Potter universe?
How is she trans?
The Polyjuice potion incident?
I don't.
Was it a male cat or female cat? Does anyone remember?
I don't know.